So we're going to get this started. This is, what is the Equality Act? And how will it affect my church and denomination? I'm Matthew Bracey. I am the Vice Provost at Welch College, Assistant Professor of Theology and Culture. I coach cross country. I do what they tell me to do. I actually want to start off with looking quickly over a passage in Scripture. 1 Timothy chapter 2. We sometimes hear this around election time. Reads, "First of all, then, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority." Typically, around election time, we say we need to pray for our leaders and we leave it at that. But the passage goes on, "So that we," the we here being Christians, "may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity." So it's not a command simply for the sake of the command. It's unto a certain effect. Paul is telling Timothy to pray for government leaders to help them enact policies, follow policies that would make it more likely that Christians would lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. In his book, Biblical Ethics, Mr. Fourlines talks about the importance not just of a given command, but also of the principle undergirding that command. What is the principle that we see here? The principle that we see here, I believe, is that we as Christians need to do what we can to make it more likely that we as Christians may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. Now, for Paul, this meant prayer. For us, not living in the Roman Empire, we've got more tools at our disposal than just prayer. We have the ability to contact representatives. We have the ability to sign petitions. We have the ability to vote, and on and on and on. You may say, so it sounds like a rather selfish reason. No, actually, if you keep reading, it's just the opposite. You'll note that Paul connects this immediately to the gospel. This, what I've just gone over, is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. For there's one God, one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. So my point is that there is, it seems to me, in Paul's mind, a logic between the ability of Christians to live tranquil and quiet lives in all godliness and dignity on the one hand, and the salvation of the unreached, the unsaved, on the other hand. Well, we may come back to that in a moment. But we're here to talk about the Equality Act. The Equality Act, introduction, is a bill that could presume to alter the way that we conduct church life and denominational life, and I would argue not for the better. In this presentation, I will first tell you about the Equality Act, including the problem that it attempts to address, and so I'll summarize what it says. I'll then consider likely results if it were passed. I say likely results because I don't know the future. You know, you don't know how government officials and people who are putting pressure on government officials are going to, you don't quite know how they're going to push and test and all that. So we'll make some educated guesses just based on what the Act says. We'll also review the Biden administration's view of the topic, since we are in the midst of a Biden administration. I will then analyze the current state of the bill. So where are we with respect to the bill? Before concluding with some ideas about what would happen, some additional ideas about what would happen if the bill were to become law. So the problem that the Equality Act attempts to address is that of discrimination against LGBTQ people and legal protections for those in that acronym. I use this designation because that's the designation that the bill uses. So you got people who say LGBT, others who add the Q, others who add other letters. The bill says LGBTQ. LGBTQ rights have slowly increased in recent history at the state and national levels. Numerous states have enacted laws prohibiting discrimination based on either sexual orientation or gender identity or both in miscellaneous areas, such as employment, housing, marriage, and so forth. So depending on what state you're in, different states may have different laws about whether you can discriminate or not. And they also, whether it's public or private, just kind of, you know, public organizations, private organizations, it just kind of depends. Nationally, the Supreme Court has effected more change than Congress through its holdings in cases such as, and I'm reaching back a bit, but there's Lawrence v. Texas from 2003, United States v. Windsor, Obergefell from about 5 years ago, v. Hodges. So this is a part of, if you know those cases and its history, this is a part of that long history. Still, despite the holdings of these cases, proponents of the act argue that discrimination persists. Unjust discrimination persists, and that the Equality Act would evidence a step forward. It's referred to as H.R. 5, House Resolution 5, refers to, and I quote here from the Act, a history and pattern of persistent, widespread, and pervasive discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. By the way, you're used to the acronym LGBTQ, perhaps. Another acronym with which to become familiar, perhaps, is that of SOGI, S-O-G-I, Sexual Orientation, Gender Identity. So that's quick for discussing this topic, SOGI. It also refers to the, quote, the act, refers to the unnecessary hardships that LGBTQ people have faced. The act, if it were to become national law, the act cites about a dozen examples of discrimination against the LGBTQ in both the private sector and the public sector at both the local, state, and federal government levels, and this act would seek to fix those things or change those things, these examples. And these include marriage, access to public accommodations, conversion therapy, parentheses, depending on who you're talking to, conversion therapy may mean something as basic as someone trying to help someone struggling through questions of their orientation, almost in just a prayerful way. So some people actually associate the concept of conversion therapy just with having a conversation. It's nothing that is changing their, that implicates their biology in any way. Employment, housing, whether purchasing or renting entities, programs and activities that receive federal financial assistance, credit applicants, jury selection, the child welfare system, and the foster care system. So these are examples that the Act cites of areas of discrimination that it would seek to address. Now, by the way, we could talk about how is it that we minister to and love people who identify as LGBTQ, et cetera, et cetera. That's an important conversation, but it's a conversation for another time. This is what's the Equality Act, and how's it going to affect my church and my denomination? By the way, employment, our institutions, our churches employ people. They employ people, so it theoretically, presumably, it implicates the church. What does it mean to receive federal financial assistance? Is being tax exempt an implicit reception of receiving federal financial assistance? Depends on how this would be interpreted. At this point, we don't know how it would be interpreted, but that's a question that we might raise. So this is the problem that the Act is attempting to address. Let's now move to the Act. I'll just say a word or two about it before moving on. The Equality Act identifies itself as, quote, an act to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation, and for other purposes. So you notice they add this sort of catch-all, and for other purposes. Well, what are those other purposes? Well, it doesn't say. It's however some judge might want to interpret it, I guess. It aims to outlaw discrimination in, as I've said, public accommodations, public facilities, public education, federal funding, not employment. It doesn't limit it to public employment, more private, credit, the jury system. And then there's this. It proposes to accomplish this goal partly by redefining the word sex to include categories of SOGI, sexual orientation, gender identity. Sex does not therefore refer to one's biology exclusively, which, by the way, is an objective determination. It refers to one's sexual orientation or gender identity, and it would elevate it to a protected class alongside the categories of race, color, religion, biological sex, national origin, age, and disability. In addition, these are, by and large, those categories I just read are, by and large, objective categories. One's ethnicity, one's national origin, one's age, these are objective determinations. However, this act, the Equality Act, would construe each of these categories according to the perception or belief of the individual, even if inaccurate. That's the language the act uses. Perception or belief, even if inaccurate, of the individual. And it uses that phrase in relation not just to the word sex, but in relation to all of those categories. At least the current manifestation of the bill. By the way, just because a bill reads a certain way at a certain time doesn't mean that it'll always read that way, because as it advances up the process, things can be tweaked, things can be changed, things can be nuanced. But that's what it says. So, what are the likely results of the Equality Act for our churches and our institutions if it were to be passed? Likely results. As I said, I cannot say with certainty what those results would be. However, I can make good guess, or I can make a guess. I don't know if it's good, but I can make a guess based on the current state of the bill. As I said, bills can be amended at any point. To say nothing about a given president's ability to shape policy in the administrative sector, sometimes called the fourth branch of government, or the Supreme Court's ability to announce a helpful or unhelpful holding. Even so, protections for people who abide by traditional morality in belief or in practice should not depend upon the shaky ground of the executive and judicial branches. So the reason I mentioned that is because this bill, it's a legislative branch thing. But we have to recognize that the executive branch and the judicial branch also potentially plays a role. So what I'm saying is, hypothetically, the bill could be passed, but that doesn't, as it is today. And there's no religious exemptions in it, by the way. We'll get to that in a minute. It could be passed as it is today, but even so, a president could, through the flick of a pen or something, through his policy with the fourth branch of government, he could put in, or she could put in, religious exemptions. Similarly, a Supreme Court holding could put in religious exemptions if it, you know, once somebody would sue and it'd go to the Supreme Court. So that could theoretically happen. But what I'm saying is that our ability to, people who abide by traditional morality, their ability to believe or practice these things should not depend upon the changing parties of whoever the executive leader happens to be, or what judges, what of the majority of nine unelected justices, and who are going to say, and who knows what they're going to say at any given time. So, were the Equality Act passed into law, it would apparently threaten the viability of all our denominational institutions, churches included, because it would interpret the commitment to a biblical view of personhood and sexuality as de facto discrimination, based on the language of the bill itself. Specifically, the Act condemns SOGI discrimination by, quote, the private sector in employment and in housing. Employment, our churches employ people. Our churches, many of them also have parsonages. So what's going to happen if someone who is, say, biologically one sex but identifies as something else applies to be a pastor in your institution? What's going to happen? Well, you're depending on a good chance you're going to not give that person the job because of your beliefs. And if they then sued you to get their 15 or 17 minutes of fame, well, you could find yourself at the middle of a big problem. Does your church or institution have a policy, whether explicit or implicit, that would preempt you from hiring someone who identifies as a, quote, gay Christian, if they identify themselves in that way? Or that would preempt you from hiring a man who said he was a woman? Here's another example. The Equality Act, so that's churches, institutions. The Equality Act would require that educational institutions also, think of the college, not discriminate against LGBTQ people in their policies concerning employment, housing, and admissions vis-a-vis federal aid. even if it violated their genuinely held beliefs, even if it constrained their free exercise of religion. This is the real problem. However, if you listen to the rhetoric of elected representatives, you would not know that there is an issue. I've painted an issue, but some people would say there's not an issue. Consider Jerry Nadler is a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from New York. He says he does not see a conflict between the Equality Act and religious liberty. Here's what he says: freedom of religion is a fundamental American value, and we do not have to choose between non-discrimination and religious liberty. We have in our existing civil rights laws a roadmap on how to advance both. That's what he says. So he says there's no problem here. He states further, we know that protections for sexual orientation and gender identity have worked in more than 20 states, and that in these places, religious freedom is still protected. So you hear a quotation like that from Jerry Nadler, and you think, what's going on here? Well, I'll tell you, Nadler fails to mention that those states include religious exemptions, titled after the pattern of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. The Equality Bill, however, does not have a religious exemption, and that's just the point. You say religious exemption, what do you mean? Give an example. Here's an example. According to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, we cannot discriminate on the basis of biological sex. And yet I ask you, do Real Baptists have female pastors? No. Religious exemption. Religious exemptions say that churches may hire only men as pastors if it is reflective of a genuinely held belief. So that's an example of a religious exemption. In contrast to these states, as I've said, so these states have laws that are like the Equality Act, but the key point is that they have religious exemptions in them for institutions that have genuinely held beliefs going back thousands and thousands of years. The Equality Act, no such religious exemption. In fact, the Equality Act explicitly disclaims recourse to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So it explicitly says, basically, for anyone who's religious and who wants to try to claim protection under RFRA, that's what it's called, you can't do it. You can't do it. That's how the current... So not only does it not give a religious exemption, it actually tries to preempt the attempt to use existing law as a protection, if you follow. Back to Nadler. Religion is no excuse for discrimination, and it should not be when it comes to sexual orientation and gender identity. I would say either he does not understand what religious freedom means, as historically conceived, or he does not care. Well, thankfully, there have been several critics who have pointed out that the Equality Act is not a win-win solution, or not the win-win solution that Congressman Nadler supposes. For example, two writers, Eskridge and Wilson, say, quote, the Equality Act would protect the LGBT community from discrimination, but makes no concessions for faith communities. So what's being done? Significantly, a coalition of some 86 faith-based institutions issued several letters regarding the Equality Act. These were letters that were sent to the House Committee of the Judiciary, the House Committee on Education and Labor, and the full House of Representatives. Incidentally, President J. Matthew Pinson joined in as a signatory of one of these letters to the House Committee on Education and Labor. The previous president of ABHE, a creditor who accredits the college, previous president Ralph Inlow, he also joined in as a signatory of these letters. So there are people coming together who represent faith communities saying, this act is not, some things need to change here. There's some problems here. The full House letter explains, should the Equality Act pass, quote, core rights would be stripped from religious colleges and universities. The Equality Act threatens the ability of these colleges and universities to hire staff that uphold their religious mission, and it threatens the withdrawal of financial aid, like Pell Grants. End quotation. The letter also describes how these threats would disadvantage, quote, tens of thousands of students from minority communities, as well as the neediest students, and then it goes on to illustrate that. In addition, the letter relates how the act defies the long, explicit, and judicially approved protections in the Civil Rights Act. It's referring to religious exemptions and things that are designed to help people who are very different and diverse within a big nation how we can live together. In conclusion of this subsection, if the implications of the Equality Act were fully realized, it would likely pose serious problems for our institutions, at least based on the way that it reads. How it would be interpreted? Well, that's anybody's guess, but we're just going forward on what the Act says. The manner in which it could threaten schools is different from the manner in which it would threaten churches. It's probably a little bit different than the manner in which it would threaten other denominational institutions, but the point is that the threat is real. Now, where does the Biden administration stand on this? Because if it were to pass the Senate, it's not yet, but if it were to pass the Senate, then it still has got to go across the president's desk. The previous president said he would not have signed such a bill. What does the current president say? In order to get into this, I want to start with a case called Hunter versus U.S. Department of Education. Perhaps you've heard of this case. It's been in the news a little bit. Approximately 40 LGBTQ students have filed a lawsuit in Oregon suing the federal government because it has provided funds to conservative colleges and universities which have, these students say, discriminated against them. This case is called Hunter v. U.S. Department of Education. By the way, you may say, who are some of these institutions? Welch is not on the list, thankfully. But the institutions implicated include, among many others, Bob Jones University, Baylor University, Union University, Lipscomb is there, Fuller Theological Seminary, Brigham Young. Not all these are traditional, you know, Christian. Liberty, Moody Bible Institute, many others. It's a suit against the U.S. Department of Education, the federal government. What does the Biden administration say? The Biden Justice Department has said that it would, quote, vigorously defend a school's religious exemption. To which you may think, well, that's good news. Vigorously defend. Three observations. The Biden administration, according to some commentators, appears to be playing politics, trying to assuage everyone rather than standing on principle. Case in point, after receiving criticism about its statement that it would vigorously defend traditional institutions, it removed the word vigorously from its statement. The word vigorously disappeared. Huh. You want to hear some criticism? Some of this is hard to hear, but it's important that we know what folks are saying out there. Someone from the Washington Post wrote an article criticizing this. The Biden administration's use of the word vigorously. What this means, this is this article from the Washington Post, what this means is that the government is now aligning itself with anti-LGBTQ hate in order to vigorously defend an exemption that everyone knows causes severe harm to LGBTQ students using taxpayer money. Second, that's one observation. Second, the Biden administration's statement that it would vigorously defend these institutions was then changed to defend. It's incoherent. Why is it incoherent? Because the Biden administration vigorously supports the Equality Act, which has no religious exemption in its current manifestation. So it says that it will offend exemptions, and yet it supports the Equality Act, which has no exemptions. there's some sort of incoherency going on here. By a third observation, by saying that it, the Justice Department, would defend these institutions, it is attempting to preempt other advocates for these institutions from inserting themselves into the process. I'll repeat that. By saying that it, the Justice Department, will defend these institutions, it is attempting to preempt other advocates for these institutions from inserting themselves into the process. Why should this matter? Consider, the Biden administration supports the Equality Act. So don't you think that its defense of these institutions is going to look fundamentally different than if, say, an organization that didn't support the Equality Act, than the way they would defend them? Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, is an institution that defends institutions that are traditionally minded. If ADF were to defend this, their defense is going to look fundamentally different. So there's legislative law, but then there's also case law that emerges from cases. So if the Biden administration has the opportunity to shape the way that case law looks when judges decide, that's pretty important, because they have an ability to shape what arguments are entered into the record and how these holdings, how these decisions are articulated. Al Mohler says this, the Justice Department is really arguing that it will take this role in defense of federal law so that it will not be defended vigorously at all. That's Al Mohler's interpretation. What the Justice Department is really doing is saying that it does not want to allow attorneys for the Christian colleges and universities to be able to make the case for themselves. By the way, it's not just the Christians who are interpreting the Justice Department's statement in this way. One writer from Slate says this: the DOJ's filing and Hunter v. Department of Education may seem surprising. President Joe Biden has, after all, promised to promote LGBTQ rights, including the rights to all students to receive an equal education. The Justice Department is not only following its general obligation to defend federal laws, here it is, it is also trying to prevent a Christian organization from taking over the defense and mounting what this author refers to as extreme arguments that could lead to a devastating subversion of civil rights law. By the way, civil rights law is in the 60s. The Equality Act is not law, but that's what we're referring to here. Biden's progressive supporters may be offended by the DOJ's defense of discrimination, but the alternative is almost certainly worse. That's what the author to Slate says. Ryan Bangert is senior counsel and vice president of legal strategy at Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's what he says. Biden's DOJ threatens the Department of Justice, threatens to abandon legal protections for religious colleges. And by the way, this flashpoint here is about colleges because of the case, Hunter v. Department of Education. But it's not. But more broadly for our purposes, it's not just about colleges, because the Equality Act, the implications of the Equality Act is much broader than colleges. It's religious organizations more generally. Bangert continues, I quote him because he says it as well as I could, better than I could. Here's what he says. Religious exemptions under U.S. law are as old as our nation. Protecting religious organizations has long yielded substantial societal benefits, from feeding the hungry to housing the homeless, to caring for the environment, to assisting struggling children and families, to educating our nation's young. Exemptions are the product of an American culture that embraces freedom and diversity and true tolerance. Exemptions also reflect the free exercise and establishment clause protections enshrined in the First Amendment. The government cannot be in the business of telling religious organizations how they must act, who they must hire, what they should believe. So that's a bit. I could say more, but that's a bit about some of the developments with respect to this topic generally from the Biden administration in recent time that has implications for the Equality Act and that whole topic. So what's the current state of the bill? Where are we? Well, some versions of this bill go all the way out to the 1970s, if you could imagine. But in recent history, It was introduced in the 2015, 2017, 2019, and now 2021 Congresses. Each time, it has died in committee so far, except for the most recent bill, which is still in committee. I could take time to go over the numbers of what did the margins look like when it was passed from, different committees from the House to the Senate and so on and so forth. The general pattern that we see is that support for the bill is gaining more and more momentum, is basically the story there. The most recent, the 2021 version has 48 co-sponsors in the Senate, 224 in the House. 48 co-sponsors, that's a lot. It's a lot. My intention for this next statement is for purposes of explanation only. So don't read anything else into it, please. This most recent act, when the act passed the House, every single Democrat voted for it. Every single Republican voted against it. You may be wondering who voted, so on and so forth. Except the two Congress people from New York, two Republicans from New York voted for it, and one who was Republican, and one Republican from Pennsylvania in the House voted for it. Otherwise, it's largely along party lines. Again, I'm not trying to make a political point per se. I'm just trying to inform you as to who the people are voting for. At this point, practically the only reason it hasn't passed the Senate, at least according to Scott Soriano, Ryder, and others, is owing to the Senate Republicans and to a Democrat, Joe Manchin. Were it to pass the Senate today, President Joe Biden has indicated, as I've suggested before, that he would sign it. On the other hand, even if it were to pass the Senate, but hypothetically we had a president who did not support it, you may say, would it die? Well, not necessarily. Because if you remember your basic civics, in the event that a president vetoes a bill, it can still become law if two-thirds of, it's either the House or the Senate, I forget. I should know that, but the point is supermajority can sign it into law. Well, what if the bill were to become law? We looked at this a little bit well ago. If the present manifestation of the bill, which has no religious exemptions, were to become law, then I suspect we would begin to see lots and lots of test cases where agitators would attempt to bait religious organizations into showing their, quote, discriminatory practices so that it might sue them. That's how this stuff is done. By the way, there are powerful, powerful organizations with lots and lots and lots of money who search for the perfect test case. That is to say, we would not see the result immediately. We would not see the result immediately, I don't suspect. But over the course of years, lots and lots of organizations would be sued, lots and lots of money would be spent. And on that point about money, let's face it, most religious organizations don't have lots and lots of money that they want to be spending on things like this. Thankfully, there are organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, but lots and lots of money would be spent. Lots and lots of good, kind people, Christians, traditional religious people, would be called horrible names. Bigot and homophobe and, anti-LGBTQ hate, whatever that was. Over the course of years, it would probably take years. It wouldn't go to the Supreme Court like that. Over the course of years, cases would make it to the Supreme Court, where the decision would ostensibly be left to the majority of 9 unelected justices. Perhaps they'd rule the law is unconstitutional. Perhaps they would say, well, it's constitutional, but you really need to add an exemption because of the First Amendment. But perhaps they wouldn't. Who can say? Who can say? The Supreme Court is surprising. Thankfully, we have seen some recent wins from the court, but who knows what the future will hold. God knows. God knows. We serve a good God, and we place these circumstances in His hands. However, I do not believe that fact means we should welcome unpleasant and unjust realities. And by the way, preempting religious people, such as traditional Christians, from exercising their genuinely held beliefs would in fact be an injustice. So I do not believe that this fact, the fact that it's in God's hands, means that we should just become sort of apathetic, that we should welcome such circumstances. I do not believe it means we should be passive toward all things political, because these developments have the potential to have real implications for the institutions of which we are a part. Well, this is very depressing. What do you do? What are we supposed to do? Well, pray. Pray. 1 Timothy 2. Pray. That's where I started. Find creative ways to attach yourselves to organizations that support you, that defend you. By the way, in my sort of mental map, you've got conservatives, and you've got liberals, and you've got progressives over here. And these are generalizations, of course. But it's interesting that some traditional Christians and conservatives, not that the two are necessarily the same, but it's interesting that there's some finding of camaraderie with more traditional liberals who just want people to have the liberty to believe and do what they want, so within reason. So there's some interesting sort of ways we're able to reach across the ideological aisle. So what can you do? You can pray, you can attach yourself to organizations that defend what you're doing. When possible, vote, recognizing that you're not just voting for a person, you're voting for a platform. At least that's what I believe. When you do vote, whoever you vote for, however you vote, I beg that you would know what the party's platform is with respect to these issues. I've looked the last two elections. It has been explicit in their political literature, their platform literature. I could spend time critiquing the Equality Act, demonstrating how it violates fundamental principles of this, that, and the other. But that's not my purpose. My purpose is, what is the Equality Act? How could it affect our institutions? I could spend time suggesting alternative policy recommendations. But again, that's a bit beyond my purpose. I would end by going to where I began. First of all, then, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity, which then Paul links to, this is good and acceptable in sight of God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. What can I do? What can you do? What can we do to make it more likely that Christians may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity? Which Paul sees a logic between that, as I've said, and the salvation of the unsaved. Well, we can pray, as Paul mentions explicitly, but underneath that's a principle. And I've tried to provide some other things that we might do. Well, I think we're out of time. I'll be respectful of folks' time and everything. So thank you for being here. Feel free to talk to me if you'd like.